Live from the bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, two men disagree on something and somehow stay friends. It's SIFPA.
Welcome to a special edition of Sif Pop. Just Aaron hanging out here with you, although you'll hear a conversation with me and Jeremy Scott, who's the voice of CinemaSins, coming up here shortly. I won't keep you too long, but I did want to say I've been wanting to have this conversation for a long time, and I'm glad to be able to throw it in the podcast feed and let you listen to it, because I love it when Jeremy and I talk movies in general. We've been good friends for a long time. We love chatting about movies and stuff. But I love it specifically when we kind of have a different take on something. And this is one of those cases. So we connected actually on Easter Sunday, which I thought was appropriate. I don't mention it in the conversation, but the idea of resurrection, and we're talking about resurrecting movies. In fact, that's what I titled this. You know, my perspective being that there's hope in resurrection. Maybe it'll be something good. Maybe it'll be something amazing. And his idea is that it's regurgitation. So wherever you stand on this, whether it's resurrection or regurgitation or some combination of the two, which is probably correct, I hope you enjoy this conversation. We had a great time chatting, and I hope you have a great time listening. We did it!
Well, I saw something move, but I'm not hearing you yet. Let me check.
You don't hear me?
Hello?
Here's to the ones who dream.
Are you just sitting over there singing La La Land the whole time, or were you actually talking back to me?
I didn't know what else to do. I want to make sure you could hear something.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, man. Let me adjust your levels here on this side.
What's up now? Am I still peaking?
No, you are no longer peaking. Sounds
past
beautiful.
Past my peak.
How you been, man?
I'm good, man. You see the Predators game last night? How could I not be good?
Yeah, you bet you're through the roof.
I'm pretty elated. Did not expect to win that game, much less absolutely dominate it. So
yeah,
I'm pretty pumped.
No, that's fun.
And
stuff.
We're going to game four. So
are you?
That'll be awesome. Yeah, man. We rented out a suite and we invited some friends and employees and whatnot. And we're going to blow it out.
Oh, that's amazing. This has been a long time coming, my friend. Thank you for making some.
I think
time.
We only traded like 50 emails to try to make this happen.
I was looking at the number. I think it's actually 54. Yeah, 54 emails.
Yeah.
Back and forth.
That's a lot. I'm a very difficult person to work with.
No, it's both of us, right? Like, there was that one day where we both were waiting on each other and thought, like, what was going on? Like, we had the time set up. We're both sitting there. I'm just working on other stuff, waiting for you to show up on the thing. And, you know, you're doing whatever and thinking that I've kind of fallen off the planet. So it just happens.
I waited like 45 minutes and I was like, all right, I'm tearing this microphone down. Something happened. Something came up and we're both just sitting there waiting on each other.
I am excited for this conversation. I guess we'll just get into it and then I'll just edit through this stuff for, you know, putting it up on the podcast or whatever, if you don't mind. But I have been wanting to have this conversation with you for, I think, over a year. I think what really piqued my interest was a tweet you did when it was either they announced the Beauty and the Beast remake or it was the trailer. I think the trailer for Beauty and the Beast came out and it was, I guess there was shot for shot stuff in the trailer. And so you went on a little Twitter rampage about it not being necessary. And I tweeted something back about, you know, what movie is necessary. And you were like, don't start with me, Aaron. And ever since then, I've been like, okay, but when can we start? You know, when do I get to start? When do we get to talk about this thing? So I'm excited for wherever this conversation ends up going.
Yeah, especially if you're going to land on the side of, you know, things like that Beauty and the Beast remake being necessary. And of course, that movie made $1 billion, and they're not going to stop doing that. But even my wife adores Beauty and the Beast. And when this trailer came out for this, she was very excited. And she went to see it and came home and was like, it just reminded me of how good the cartoon is. It's not special enough to really have been made. So I haven't seen it, so I can't really speak specifically to that movie, but you know, these Disney live action remakes of all their animated films is just one of many ways this kind of remake itis is killing me, because we've seen all these stories and for the most part they're not going to change them enough to really make it something new.
Well, you don't have to worry about the necessary thing. I think we agree that they're not necessary. It would be hard to argue that any movie really is quote unquote necessary.
Schindler's List.
Okay, you win. Schindler's List is necessary. you found one. There's probably a handful. But the other thing that kind of set it off, kind of set this actual recording in motion, was the Matrix announcement, which has shifted a little bit since it was announced. But the idea that they were remaking The Matrix, which now seems like it's going to be more of kind of an expanded universe kind of idea, kind of thing. But that's kind of why we landed at actually having this conversation, because it just keeps happening over and over and over again. Hollywood going back to, you know, the well, whether it be a, you know, a sequel, a remake, a reboot, expanded universe. You know, the idea that original IP is not the first thing on Hollywood's mind. The first thing on their mind is making dollars off of stuff they already know is successful.
Well, right. The people who are making the green lighting a movie just decisions, these people are not creatives. They're business people. They're
right.
accountants. They're people beholden to shareholders. And when you see something like Fate of the Furious come out, which is maybe the very definition of an unnecessary movie, and I just read today it's on track to be the biggest global opening for any movie ever.
Yeah, so it's huge.
How do you blame that studio exec then for green lighting that picture? You almost can't, from a logic standpoint. As long as we as an audience are going to flock to the things that are not original, why bother putting in the extra effort to create something original? The Matrix is a really good one to talk about this issue on, because the announcement originally did sound like a remake, and that was something I was vehemently opposed to. Of course, this is also my favorite movie of all time. But now that it's come out, and even the writer of the film has said, you know, most of what you just said, but basically, you know, we're not remaking anything. We're just kind of going back to this world. That actually is an idea I like, because I think the Matrix universe is something that is rich with potential in a way that something like Fast and Furious universe is not. There are more stories to tell here. Like, I've pitched my own young Morpheus idea months ago, and that sounds like the direction they're going, because they're talking to Michael B. Jordan, and, you know, It's just a subtle little change, but one makes me angry and one makes me excited.
Do you think that's a matter of taste in some regard? I mean, the comparison to Fast and Furious. Like, if somebody loves that universe and they love those characters, could that just be a matter of taste? You know, one being, you know, quote unquote, exciting or good and the other not?
I think the general movie-going audience has shifted towards seeking spectacle. And that's why we see these Fast and Furious movies get bigger and louder every time. And the Transformers movies do the same thing. And to many people, going to the theater and seeing a bunch of explosions and car stunts is a very fulfilling experience. And they're entertained. And it's just that I typically want more out of a movie than that. I'm not trying to put down people who like Fast and Furious, but I want characters I can connect to. I want story arcs. I want character arcs where people are actually forced to change something about themselves by the end. And so maybe my tastes are just different than the general public's right now, and that's why we're sitting where we are. But if you go back and show me a young Morpheus who is the opposite of a believer in the One, right?
Mm-hmm,
he maybe
yeah.
even is like Scully from X-Files. He's
right.
a skeptic. And then show me the arc that takes him to the Prophet Morpheus we know in the Matrix movie. I think that would be a very fulfilling journey to see, and gives us a lot of ways to play around in this universe. We know from the sequels that this loop of the One has happened 5 or 6 times at least. And so there's various ways to tweak it and, you know, just give us some more time in that world. The Animatrix, did you ever see that?
Oh, yeah. I've actually gone back and watched the Animatrix movies more than I have watched 2 and 3.
I really
enjoy those little bits and pieces that they
and
did
with that
stuff.
I think they show how much potential there is here in this universe. You know, get different directors to give it a different tone. I don't know. I'm much more excited about a story that goes back in time in that universe than I would be in telling me another story of Neo and the One, or just recasting or shot-for-shot remaking it. That would be terrible.
I think it has a lot to do with, and I'm a huge proponent of this, and by the way, as I expected, we'll probably be on common ground much more than we're on opposite ground on a lot of this stuff, but I think it has a lot to do with wanting something new, right? Or wanting
yes.
a surprise, because you can't be surprised
yes.
by something old. You can be surprised by something new. So, you know, it's the same reason I don't go see trailers. It's the same reason I try to go into movies as pure as possible, because I want to be surprised. I want to be told a story I don't know. And so when you're remaking
yeah.
something, you're being literally told a story you already know. So, you know, there's
you
something
know
there.
How this live action Beauty and the Beast is going to go before you sit down. And I don't care what they changed or what
right.
songs they added. There's nothing new there from a story or character perspective. And, you know, I think you're hitting the nail on the head. Is that I personally, and I don't know how many of us are out there, but I do want something new. I want to be surprised. That's why movies like Pulp Fiction or The Raid 2 stand out to me so much, is because I'd never seen anything like that. And, you know, I always come back to that Seinfeld episode where the dentist converts to Judaism for the jokes. And Jerry's all offended and goes to confession, and he's trying to tattle on this guy. And the guy's like, does this offend you as a Jewish person? He's like, no, it offends me as a comedian. because I view myself as a creative person. I have ideas. I write some of them down. I've written a book. I've written songs and poems, and I have movie ideas all the time. And it's just very depressing to be that kind of person,
yeah,
and see the same thing month in and month out, year in and year out. And just, I feel like creativity is dying. I think I even made a video once about, you know, the whole copy of a copy of a copy thing, and that we're basically training our current crop of young writers to adapt and remake other movies instead of focusing on breaking new ground. And what happens in 10, 20 years from now? Do we even have writers who are able to be creative? Have they just kind of been beaten into remake submission? I don't know.
I think, and this is one of the places I think we'll diverge a little bit, because I think you see a world where remake culture is destroying originality, and I'm just not sure I see that world. I feel like there's still a lot of original stuff that happens, and I feel like a lot of the stuff that gets honored, and even some of the stuff that makes a lot of money, can be original stuff. It's just, you know, and in some ways, it's the money that studios make from, you know, these remakes that allows them to take a risk on something that might be original.
But they don't take the risk on the original anymore, not financially. And that's why it's harder and harder to see movies like Michael Clayton get made that are, you know, drama. Chris is always saying on our podcast, adult dramas like The Untouchables. They don't make a lot of these movies anymore because their budget is too demanding, whether it's for cast or what have you. And they're going to throw all that budget, 95% of it, at the stuff they have data to prove will hit. They're gonna throw all that money at Fast 9 instead of what could probably be 5 unique original ideas. And what I see is it's eating up resources that could go to originality. Yes, there are original things being made. You know, we got Denis Villeneuve, we've got Damien Chazelle, we've got great young talented filmmakers who are being very creative. You were singing La La Land when I hopped on this thing earlier today. So
right.
It's not as though that doesn't exist, but I don't think that in itself is proof that we're not taking away from original ideas, because I just view every dollar that goes toward a loud action extravaganza like Transformers or remake is a dollar that didn't go to some talented young filmmaker like Damien Chazelle. How many of them are out there that we don't know about because they get put on Transformers 5, or, you know, they get the writer's room together and come up with 14 stories for Transformers because they can. But what could all of those writers have written in that 6 months that was original?
I'm just not sure, because you're talking about dollars being spent, but they're not just dollars that are going into the universe and not coming back. In fact, they are dollars that are reproducing themselves for these studios. So, you know, we've already mentioned the absolute, you know, oodles and oodles of money that Beauty and the Beast is making and Fast 8 is making. You know, those
but
are.
Do you think Disney's going to funnel that money? They're going to funnel that money that they make off Beauty and the Beast into 3 more live action remakes. They're not going to funnel it into something like Tomorrowland because that didn't work very well for them. And it was expensive and they lost money because it wasn't as good. Whereas they can turn around to Pixar and say, "Make us Toy Story 4, and we'll take that billion and turn it into Lion King live action 2."
But they also turn it into, you know, Pixar's original films. You know, Coco's coming out or whatever, and I know very little about it because I, you know, stay as pure as possible. But, I mean, it's an original film. So I just feel like there's an argument to be made that if it weren't for them just playing, you know, marketplace dynamics, that they wouldn't have the ability to even give us the original content that they lose money on, by the way, often.
Sure, sure.
You know,
this is the
they wouldn't be able to give it
to us. That's the problem.
Us.
Yeah, because they have to be profitable. They have shareholders. And if they made all 100% creative original ideas, the American public is just too dumb. And we're not going to go to all of those. And we're going to be waiting for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3. Because, and again, I often put the blame for this on moms of teenagers. Because having worked at the theater for 12-some years, I can't tell you how many times just carloads of kids get dropped off. They didn't want to go see a movie. Mom just needed them to get out of her hair for 2 hours. Well, what are we going to go see? We're 13. We're stupid. Let's go see Fast 9. I mean, it's just that it's got to be a balance. And without, I don't think we can have either without the other. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Without a Fast and Furious, we can't have a La La Land. Without a La La Land, well, I guess we probably could have a Fast and Furious. It is kind of amazing sometimes to think about how much original creative stuff we do get. You know, like Arrival was one of my favorite movies of last year, mm-hmm. and it wasn't probably cheap to make. And, you know, it's this brainy it's a movie about linguistics. And so it's kind of a minor miracle that something like that can get made with major stars. I don't want to make it sound like nothing original or nothing quality is ever getting through anymore. It's just, you know, I think about the people who are in college now. And you remember me in college, and I was writing screenplays with Josh, and I wanted to be a filmmaker or a film reviewer or something. And, you know, I never got there yet, and that's fine. My life has taken many turns. But how many of those kids are out there right now that want to go into filmmaking? Maybe they even have a killer idea, but they can't get in the door because the industry as a whole is kind of – because, I mean, remakes and sequels have been a problem for 30, 40 years, but let's not pretend like it's not the worst it's ever been, because it is. it makes me feel like there are creative people who will never get a shot because they don't play by the rules enough, right? Like, if somebody at Hollywood said, okay, I will let you write a screenplay that's original, but first you have to write Transformers 8 for me, I wouldn't do it. I don't think I would. Like, my soul would not be in that Transformers 8.
It reminds me of, you know, we've been mentioning La La Land quite a bit, but it reminds me of... isn't this how it works? You know, I do two for you and one for me. And he's like, all for me, none for you. And
yeah.
He's like, all for, but it's my idea, right? And that's kind of what, you know, it reminds me of in many ways is if we end up getting to a place where the movie studios are J.K. Simmons and they're like, no, all for us, none for you. That's where we have a problem. I just don't see that happening. And I think a lot of that has to do with the prestige, not the movie, but in general, the idea of prestige movies and awards and those kind of things that I think original IP will always have a leg up on, you know, repurposed content for those kind of things. So I think studios know that's important to the artists.
Well, and I even think that's kind of hollow. Like, I think for the most part, they only do that so they can turn around and brag that they had an Academy Award winning film and then put it on the trailer for their next film from the studio that brought you Best Picture, yada, yada. Like, I don't think they greenlight much art unless they have a motivation for it, if that makes sense. You know, most of the experimenting is being done on an independent basis. For something like Snowpiercer that is a Hollywood production in the truest sense, except for where the money came from. And that's, I think, the outlets where we're seeing the creativity seep towards. And, you know, we just did our podcast, I guess it's for tomorrow, where we go through the whole summer of 2017 and just preview the whole summer. And it's just miserable. Have you looked at this summer? It's miserable.
I have, yeah.
Like, there's almost nothing to be excited about. War of the Planet of the Apes is the biggest one I'm excited about. But we just have this Mummy from Tom Cruise, looks like a big giant noise machine.
What about Dunkirk? You're not excited about Dunkirk?
Dunkirk was the only other one that we were like, oh yeah, that sounds good. But, you know, I'm kind of a little nervous about Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I'm not real sure on Guardians 2, if we're going to get a little too much Marvel in there, I don't know. And there's just Fast 8. There's very little to get excited about. And I remember a time, I know you do too, when the big summer action films were still at least 50% original. Like when Jurassic Park came out and Twister came out. And, mm-hmm. I mean, Independence Day when it came out. And it just feels like at least the summer season has squeezed out all the creativity into the awards season. And the summer season is just bombast.
Yeah, I think you're right about the independent movement being kind of the savior in this whole thing. And what's nice about that is technology has made it so that the independent movement can be stronger than ever. It doesn't take millions of dollars to make a film. There are people making films on their phones and they're great quality films. So I think there, you know, that's kind of the other part of it is I think we will always have that artistic original stuff because it actually doesn't take a lot to invest, you know, to make it anymore.
Yeah, no, and that's a good point, because it's not just cost. cost of technology, cameras, editing, but it's also education. There are so many resources out there. You know, like there's a woman halfway around the world who built an entire house watching YouTube tutorials, right?
Wow.
So a filmmaker who wants to improve themselves doesn't have to go and find funding from a studio to make a movie. They can make something and go online. Okay, here's how I use this filter on this lens for this kind of shot, and here's how I use After Effects to make this effect. And it really has brought the tools to the masses. And that's why you see somebody like Gareth Edwards, who did Godzilla and Rogue One? I think it's Edwards.
Yeah, I think it is Edwards.
Yeah, and he did a YouTube short film with some pretty fancy effects, and that put him on the map. And like the next thing I know, he got a pretty small budget to make, I think this film's called Monsters. And then he got Godzilla, and then he got Rogue One, and now he's an industry vet. And it all started because of YouTube. And so we're in a whole new age, and I think that's going to mean a lot about, you know, for where creativity goes in film over the next 10, 15 years, because you've also got Netflix and Amazon now acting as studios, you know, producing films with millions of dollars in budgets. And sooner or later, you know, the whole system's going to be completely different looking.
And I think of Favreau, who, you know, directs Iron Man and makes enough money that he can turn around and invest in Chef. You know, and it's just, yeah. It's one of those things where an artist will always find a way to be an artist because that's in their blood. And the financiers will always find a way to turn a dollar because that's in their blood. So it's kind of that tug and pull, I think, is always going to be where art and commerce have to exist together. And yeah. It's not an easy tug and pull because they have different purposes.
Well, and just I don't think anything you said reminded me of this, but I'm just thinking about Edgar Wright and Ant-Man and, you know, how frustrating that is to see somebody who has such a unique, creative, quirky vision. And the studio system at Marvel basically beat him out of there. Like, he couldn't do what he wanted to do. He couldn't make his film,
right,
ultimately. And so they found another director who would do what they wanted. And I guess that's another area where creativity, I think, is being squashed, because even Joss Whedon made Avengers, and then Marvel basically crushed his soul, forcing him to do all this stuff on the second one. He basically almost said it in interviews.
Yeah, he was pretty blatant about that stuff.
He's one of our brightest, most talented original creators in all of entertainment, and I just hate the notion that this current studio summer blockbuster, you know, MCU, everything has to have a shared universe. I think it's stifling some creativity, and I think that's sad.
Let's play the silly game of assigning blame, which is always a silly game because there's obviously a lot of factors that go into anything. I remember watching, I think it's a video you did a while ago, where you basically show pictures of headlines of remakes or sequels or whatever, and then some profane insult to the studios. It's on your personal channel, I think. And that video very much to me says this is the studio's fault, you know, that this is happening. So let's assign, and we've talked about it being the viewer's fault as well. Where would you put the highest percentage of the blame for remake culture?
I think the majority, it's not by a lot, but I think the majority is on the studio side, because I've spent enough time in the music industry and known enough people who were in it pretty deeply to know that, at least in my opinion, a large percentage of pop music is you like what they tell you to like, because they just don't put anything on the air that they don't want to.
Right.
And so, you know, do we like Miley Cyrus and Selena Gomez and Justin Bieber because we really like them, or because we hear it every 15 minutes on the pop radio station and eventually it just becomes like familiar? I think there's a certain amount of that, you know, that yes, the American public is dumb and they have an appetite for dumb, big, loud movies, but is that because they have an appetite for it or because that's all they've gotten for the last 15 years? And so to a certain extent, I blame the studios a little more, but I also, I'm on record 3 times in this talk right now calling people stupid. So I do think that we have our own guilt to bear here.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess I'm one of those stupid people too, because, you know, I enjoy, here's the thing, and I guess I should say this too, because I know you've made a point of saying this, and I think we're on common ground here. It's not about whether or not the movie that's made is good. That's not what we're talking about. That's not what you're talking about.
Right.
The fact that the Beauty and the Beast remake is actually, in my opinion, a fun, entertaining, you know, joyous movie. That's not the point. The point is whether or not it should have had money invested in it and it actually been a project. Right? Am I stating that right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So as we look at the fact that, you know, it's not about whether or not the film is actually good, it's about whether it should be made, then of course the blame goes on the decision makers, right? So that would make sense from your perspective that the decision makers are the ones that are to blame for what is being made. However, I think the reason I lean more towards it being our fault is because we drive the decision makers with our monetary decisions. And I don't know that I agree with you that we're stupid. I just think we enjoy certain things and we don't mind going back to them. I like to use the metaphor of food a lot. I think it can work. Which is there, you know, pizza is something I can enjoy time and time and time again. And then if you want to give me a fruit pizza, I'll go, oh, that's a different version of pizza. Let me try that one. Oh, I kind of like that too. You know, there's this thing where you like something, let's go back to it. And I don't know that that's stupidity. I just think it's you know, it's how we learn what we like and make our decisions in that regard. You know what I mean?
Well, okay, but what about, and I don't know what this percentage is, but what about the percentage of moviegoers, film lovers, who just go to the movies every week or every month? They still have only the options in front of them. And so to say the audience chose Fast 8 is a little disingenuous, because Fast 8 was probably on 5 of the screens at every 10 screen in America. You had minimized choices here. If you're one of those moms dropping off a van load of kids,
right,
you didn't choose to go leave the house to watch this specific movie. You go like going to the movies. And so I don't know that we can say because X movie makes X millions of dollars, it means the audience wants that. It may just mean they didn't have better options.
I can see that. You do touch on another area of the blame, which is our need as a mass media culture to have something to talk about. And the best thing to talk about is the one we think everybody else is going to be talking about. You and I factor into that with doing podcasts or reviews or those kind of things. The first movie review I got out this weekend was Fast 8. Why? It's the one most people are talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's why you typically go on Thursday night to see an opening film so that you can get your opinion out there on Friday, because we're such an immediate culture now.
Right.
Like within 2 weeks, people won't be talking about Fast 8. They'll be talking about Guardians 2. But for right this weekend, that's all anyone's talking about. But that's why every single popular YouTube reviewer puts their review out either before the movies come out because they saw a screening, or they put it out on Friday because it's a flash and then it's gone. So again, I don't even know if this being the highest grossing opening of all time even means anything. It might just mean, like you said, people wanted to be in the conversation.
Yeah. And so all of those things together, I think, do make it difficult sometimes to really parse, decision making from the studios, what they're trying to do, what their purposes are. And at the end of the day, they have an easy black and white out. It's a bottom line. If a movie makes a lot of money for them, well, obviously that was a good decision. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Now, for us, that's different because, you know, there are plenty of movies that are awful that make oodles of money. So, the purposes are across there.
Look at Warner's and the DCU. Batman v Superman, Suicide Squad, they were terrible. Everybody hated them. The reviews were bad, but they still made money as though they were hits. And so there's no reason to stop. No reason not to keep going with Justice League and Wonder Woman, because even if they're terrible, we're making bank, baby.
Yeah, it's hard to convince somebody who puts a dollar in and gets $5 out that they're making a bad decision, you know?
Exactly. Well, that's why I said in the outset, I don't blame the studios or the
but you do.
Producers, whoever. I don't blame them for making a decision that's based on finances.
Okay.
It just hurts my soul as a creative person to see it happening, and I wish it would change.
So,
if I were in their place, I would make the same decision because my job depends on it.
Right. Is there a
way... You get fired if you don't make money.
Is there a way to change it? Is there, you know, how does this change? At what level do we just have to continue to be an educated audience and stop going to see, like... is there a day where people actually don't go and see Wonder Woman because it's a, you know, DC property and they don't trust it anymore? Or how does it change?
It's never going to change the way I want it to. There's always going to be big, dumb, uncreative sequels and remakes, always. I would like to see the percentage come down. And I think the way that that happens is for more films like Snowpiercer. That's really my best model, because he basically went and got all private money and then hired regular Hollywood crew and actors and had complete control himself to make this bonkers idea. Could you imagine being a studio head hearing a pitch for this movie? You'd be like, no way. But it's an awesome, fun thrill ride, and we wouldn't have seen it if it had been part of the traditional system. And so I think the more we see that kind of thing happening, the more the studios will take notice and say, we should put X aside every year for some bonkers creative original idea, because they're doing it. I mean, you see somebody like A24 as a production company that's almost Pixar levels of home runs at this point in terms of the films that they've put out, both in terms of reviews and making money. Mm-hmm. And so I think that kind of thing will push the studios, but it has to be accompanied by some drop-off. And this is where it gets interesting, because I do think American audiences are probably tiring of Fast and Furious. Mm-hmm. And the new Pirates movie this year is going to be, I think, a real interesting case, because I think Americans are going to ignore it. But it's going to make so much money in China, they'll probably make another Pirates movie.
Well, yeah, we haven't even talked about the international impact.
Yeah,
on
the
this
global
kind of stuff.
Audience yeah. is completely unpredictable. Like, China's, you guys, I love you guys, but you got some whack taste in movies that is completely unpredictable. And so we don't know if a movie's going to do well in China or not until it does, and we're all like, huh, so that happened. And, you know, that's going to influence American studio decisions. If it's not already, global audience is going to influence them more than domestic very soon. Because, again, it's just about following the money.
I heard recently, and this is totally apocryphal, so it could be completely not true. Let me get that out of the way, because I have not double-checked this or researched this.
Aaron's about to lie.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. The characters in Kong Skull Island, there were two scientists. One was an Asian woman and one was an American man. And in the U.S. version, the Asian woman is hardly in the movie, but what I heard was that the edit is totally different for the international audience, and she's the character that comes to the forefront, and he takes a step back.
That's interesting.
That blows my mind, but why wouldn't you do something like that?
Well, I get why. I mean, well, it's kind of like Iron Man 3 did they boosted the Chinese doctor scenes where they're helping fix Tony's
right,
heart
yeah,
at
yeah.
the end in the Chinese edit that wasn't in the American edit. And I get why you do that from a financial standpoint, but from a creative standpoint, unless you're trying to make Clue, I don't think different versions of your movie out there is a good thing, because then you're basically telling me I don't really have a story to tell.
Right.
I just want to take your money, and I'll tell whatever story you want to hear so I can take your money. And you know, I'm going to side with the people who have on the page what they want to make before they ever lift a finger to make the film. But again, you know, they're making a smart business decision, and you know, there's more money in the rest of the world than there is in the US. And so they're going to keep going after it. And so, yeah, it probably won't ever change. At least not for a really long time.
I want to ask you this question because I think we have different answers to it. And I want you to know I haven't done this isn't a gotcha moment, like where I've done the research and I know the actual answer. But here's the question. Do you feel like more independent original IP is being made today than before or less?
More, but only because there's more people on the planet. There's more outlets, YouTube,
right.
and
well, right.
So I had somebody on Twitter make this argument to me when I was bemoaning the remakes and sequels, saying in 2016 there were more original films released than any year prior, or something like that. And I was like, well, yeah, there were more films released than, like, when I was growing up, E.T. stayed in my home theater for a year, right? A year.
Yeah.
And now you've got 500 major releases a year, and everything's hitting 4,000 screens. And so, yes, because the total of everything has gone up, then I do think the amount of original IP has gone up. But I think its percentage to the whole has gone down.
Yeah, and that could, I actually agree on both of those accounts, so I guess we don't disagree. I'll find something we disagree about here eventually.
It's not hard. We don't have to look very hard.
But for me, and this probably is where we kind of see the world differently, whether it be optimism and pessimism or whatever, but I really feel like we are in a universe where I have the ability to see more creative, artistic, original stuff because the big dumb stuff exists and is making oodles of money. It doesn't bother me that stuff is around or making money or doing good work, because I feel like it's providing an industry that can give me what I want better than it could before.
Yeah, I just think some of those big, dumb, loud ones don't have to be remakes and sequels. I mean,
that's true. No, that's a great point.
I mentioned Twister and Independence Day. Those were big, dumb, loud action movies, but they were at least original ideas that I hadn't seen before. And so, you know, I'm more inclined. I trash this this new Luc Besson movie, Valerian and the whatever Planets of Tomorrow or whatever. I trash it in our podcast tomorrow. But, you know, I'm more in favor of something like that than I am Fast 8, because at least that's a new thing I've never seen.
Yeah, you take a big swing and sometimes you miss, and that's okay. Like, I totally get that.
Yeah.
I'm totally for that as well. Let me ask you this question. I want you to rank in order of what you would rather see if somebody's going to repurpose content. Which of these would you rather see? And go ahead and put them in order if you can. Sequels, reboots, remakes, or expanded universe. I'll give you can think about it a little bit, but just those four things.
Give it like to me again.
Sequels, so that's like a direct sequel that continues the story, you know, those kind of things. Reboots, where you're in the same universe, but you don't have to worry about continuity. You're starting it all over again. Remake, whereas where you take a movie and you just remake the movie, or expanded universe, where you're telling totally different stories from the same universe.
Okay, so I don't know what order I'm ranking them in, but I'll go worst to best.
Okay,
reboots is at the top.
Okay, the best, the worst.
No, the worst.
Okay, got it.
That is the cheapest ploy. You're basically just trying to not call yourself a remake, and you're saying this property is so old.
That
and
surprises
our actors
me.
Are so old.
Yeah,
we can't make it without calling it a reboot, and that's just dumb. Remake is second on that list. And then what were the other two?
Sequels.
Shared universe and sequel.
Yeah.
So it'd be sequel, then shared universe.
Okay.
So the best of all those options is expand the universe, like this Young Morpheus idea. And I'll give you another example that I'm really happy with that I like. The Professional 2, with a grown-up Natalie Portman being the assassin.
Okay.
That is a sequel/expanded universe, but it's not rebooting anything. It's not remaking anything. And so that's kind of where I draw the line.
That actually really surprises me. I thought for sure remakes would be below reboots for you, because, you know, you can consider like The Dark Knight a reboot. You know, it's taking Batman and rebooting
okay,
it.
Okay, but if we're going to define reboot in a way that encompasses The Dark Knight, then yes, I would flip-flop them. I don't consider The Dark Knight a reboot, and I don't think anybody ever called Batman Begins a reboot.
You don't think so?
Maybe in a studio meeting. Maybe. No, I mean, not in terms of like news about the film coming out or somebody talking about the film behind the scenes. I think in board meetings they might have said, let's reboot Batman, but it was just, it's been a long time, let's make another Batman movie.
Okay, we may be having a little bit of just kind of a semantic disagreement, which is fine.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like The Amazing Spider-Man, would you consider that a reboot?
Well, that one I did, because it came only 7 years after the previous one, and it was a clear cash grab. But if it had been 20 years and we just hadn't had another Spider-Man, I think they could have put out a movie called Spider-Man without calling it a reboot. And, you know, I guess, again, I'm using the term reboot maybe the way they do in terms of marketing or spin.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, yeah, that technically The Amazing Spider-Man and Batman Begins, they're all reboots in a way of speaking, but I don't view them that way. To me, a reboot is something like where they're like, I really want to take advantage of this property. Like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that's a reboot.
Yes.
It makes me so mad. Anyway, yeah, I do hate them more because it feels like you're trying to make me think you're being creative when I know you're just grabbing cash.
Ah, I can understand that. I think for me, remakes are, if I'm, you know, going about this, are the worst. Again, I'm the person who says, bring me whatever movie you want to bring me. I'll, you know, take a look. And if I enjoy it, I enjoy
sure.
it. But remakes seem the least creative to me. The stuff that Disney's doing with their, you know, turning stuff into live action, even though I'm enjoying it and I've actually liked all of those movies so far, it seems to me the laziest of all of these.
It is.
Types
well,
of things.
It is in one regard. They even cast James Earl Jones in this
yeah,
Lion King live
I don't
action.
Get that. I really don't get that.
No, you're not trying to make any. It's like when you hear somebody cover a song, but it sounds exactly like the original, and you're like, what was the point? Like,
yeah.
If you're not going to put your own spin on it, don't cover a song. That's just dumb. That's just karaoke.
Yeah.
And so we've got a cinematic karaoke going on over at Disney right now.
And again, I'm on the record as enjoying these films. So, you know, it's a weird place to be. To be like, I liked this movie. I enjoyed going. I recommended other people go see it. And at the same time,
I don't get why it was made. You know, I don't understand why the energy is being invested this way. So it's a weird kind of, you know, cognitive dissonance that happens, you know, in my mind when I enjoy something that I wasn't for, you know, happening. Which you've talked about, the Toy Story sequels being that way for you.
Well, yeah, and that's probably the best example for me. Two movies that I think are fantastic, but completely unnecessary. And I don't think either Toy Story 2 or 3 takes me anywhere emotionally that the first one doesn't. And, you know, I know what happens is Pixar says, well, we're not going to do it till we have a story that we really like. And then over the next 2-3 years, I think they start to convince themselves they like a story idea more than they really do, because they all know it'll be a huge hit. And so I'm really worried about this Incredibles sequel because, you know, is it necessary? I don't know. I need to see what the story is. But, like, I don't know. And I just think there's a lot of unnecessary crap being made.
Right. And I think the essence of where we might disagree is in – I think you are vehemently wanting to change that, whereas I am just enjoying it for what it is. Does that make sense? Like, it doesn't bother me that those exist. And I think it does bother you.
It does. In fact, if I thought it had any kind of a chance, I would try and create some kind of opening weekend boycott of one of these Disney live action movies. If I thought I could somehow, and I can't, that's why I'm not doing it. But if I thought I could somehow rally enough people to skip a movie and help it tank opening box office, I think that would be awesome. It's never going to happen because I don't have enough reach or personality or likability. But that is what I would like to see. I would love to see one of these Disneys come out and everybody just goes, nope, done. I'm not going to watch that. And then it makes no money and they're like, oh, formula's broken. What do we do now? Maybe creative? Maybe be creative?
Yeah, that's an idea. We'll kind of close this out because we're heading up towards an hour and I don't want to keep you forever. But is there a remake or a reboot, you know, one of those lower categories for you, the stuff that you know, really bothers you, that you actually do love and are glad exist? Is there even one example?
I'll give you a couple. I have seen both versions of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Okay.
I think the American version is completely unnecessary. But I really enjoyed watching it. And if either one of those could have existed without the other, I think, like, if the American one had been made first and there hadn't been a previous, like, Swedish one or whatever, I would think it was great. And then the same thing goes for that Let the Right One In and Let Me In, the American remake of that. I think those are both fantastic films. But again, the American remake is unnecessary. It's like The Office, right? The American Office is great. The British Office is great. We didn't need to make The American Office. It didn't need to happen. We had that humor already. It existed. We just, you know, took the accents off of everybody.
I know what you're saying, but I actually totally disagree with you. I think The American Office is a totally different show than The British Office.
Well, like, it became a totally different show.
Yeah.
The first season, there are several plot lines and tone that is very similar to the British show. And as it gained its following and Steve Carell kind of came into his own,
that's exactly
they
it,
made
yeah.
it something new. I agree with that, but it's still in total unnecessary. I don't need to see it. So, you know, I don't know.
I think that for me, I go back to even like I was looking, the research I was doing was to see when did this whole idea of remake culture start? And a lot of people put it with the sequels really starting to take off in the late 70s, early 80s. It's kind of when sequels became a thing. Yeah, horror movies and even, you know, Summer Fair, the Jaws movies, you know, had a bunch of sequels. I guess you could consider that horror. Star Wars certainly was another example of one, you know, they populated with sequels. But they were doing some research on remakes especially, and remakes have been around from the inception of movies. In fact, The Great Train Robbery, which is often cited as the first narrative movie ever made, was remade the very next year with the exact same plot in the exact same name. And I was like, wow, like this is not new. This has been happening. And then I started thinking about like Hitchcock. Hitchcock did The Man Who Knew Too Much twice within 15 years. It's crazy.
Well, even King Kong. There's a 1930s King Kong and a 1970s King Kong.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the idea of it is not new. And it's a very simple idea because you're just playing on nostalgia for the most part, right? Like the reason this Power Rangers movie came out this year was because everybody who loved Power Rangers in the 90s is just the right age now to have a young family, and we're trying to hit that nostalgia. And that's a circle of life, baby. Everybody's going to keep having kids. And so your kids, whatever they're into, 10, 15 years from now, Hollywood's going to make a big budget remake of it. I guarantee you.
Yeah. The question is, will our kids be into anything that was actually new to them, or will they only be into stuff that was new to us 20 years ago? You know what I'm saying? Like, my kids are into all the same stuff I was when I was a kid.
Well, and see, that's the problem, right? Is that we're going to end up with every generation being connected to the Ninja Turtles and the Power Rangers and the Transformers. Yep. And that we're just going to be a cyclical recycling culture. And I'm speaking in exaggeration and hyperbole to make my point, but that's what I fear, is that we're starting down a path that's just going to loop us on a 10, 15 year loop.
Yeah. And that is, if it does go that way, then I will bow to you and say, I'm sorry, you were right. You were a prophet among men. But currently I just don't see it going that way. I really feel like we have more opportunities today for new original stuff if we want it. And I think the problem is we don't necessarily want it.
Well, I will point out that in the last 6 to 12 months, what are the highest profile successes for Netflix? You have Stranger Things, a show that trades on 80s movie nostalgia. Yeah. You could almost call it a remake. You have Mystery Science Theater, which is a remake, right? And then you have all these Marvel shows, which are at best adaptations, and in some cases remakes. I think there's a lot more of it out there than we realize, and it ain't going away anytime soon, and it makes me sad.
Well, Jeremy will continue to be sad, and I will continue to be hopeful, and we will continue to argue every once in a while, and it'll be fun. How's that sound?
Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Well, there it is. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I hope you did, too. Thanks for taking a listen. Please know Sift Pop is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network, and you can find out more about other live and later shows on the network by following the feed at Mixlr.com/Studio DNA. That's the place to listen live if you want. That's MIXLR.com/Studio DNA. Also, a huge amount of thanks from our hearts to our patrons who make it possible through Patreon support. There's a lot of people giving their monthly to make this show and others on the Studio DNA Network possible. Support starts at $3 a month, comes with some pretty fun perks. You can find out more at patreon.com/Studio DNA. There's lots of ways to connect with this podcast. If you have any thoughts about our conversation today, what we talked about, any response from that, you can do it in many ways. You can go to SoundCloud, leave comments there. You can tweet at us. You can leave comments at iTunes. Leave a rating while you're there if you don't mind as well. Or just email us, feedback@sifpop.com. That's also where you'll go if you have a question, anything like that. Finally, if you're having a good time and you love this podcast, think in your mind right now of another movie lover who you think might like this show, and then don't withhold that information from them. Go let them know about it. That is how more people find the show, more than any other way, is because a friend says, you got to check this out. So think of somebody you know who loves movies and let them know about Sift Pop. We'd really appreciate it. We'll be back in just a couple days, recording live and putting in the feed some thoughts on summer movies. I think we're going to do a summer movie preview heading up this week on Sift Pop. So we'll see you there.